Hello and welcome to Stronger Voices Together, brought to you by John Lyons Charity, a podcast dedicated to exploring the diverse, vibrant world of disability and inclusion. The charity's funding strives to support all children and young people through education, including those with learning and access needs, championing their right to access the same opportunities as anyone else. I'm your host, Lucy Edwards, blind broadcaster, content creator, and disability activist. And I'm delighted to be on this journey with you. For those of you listening to this podcast and not watching, I'm joined by my gorgeous guide dog, Miss Molly, at my feet. My audio description is that I've got a forest green dress on. It's velour in feel and touch. And I'm wearing a nude lipstick and coral eyeshadow. In this episode, we're exploring the value of arts and culture in both mainstream schools, special schools, and out-of-school settings, particularly for visually impaired, deaf, neurodiverse and disabled children and young people. For too long, arts education has been undervalued in comparison to other academic subjects. We're here to challenge this hierarchy, highlighting how the arts fosters creativity, confidence and communication skills that are crucial for the holistic development for young minds. To shed more light on the importance of cultural capital for young people, I'm delighted to welcome Ali King, Chief Executive of Turtle Key Arts. Hello.
Hello, Lucy. Thank you and welcome. Very pleased to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. I always love to start these podcasts by asking all of my guests for an audio description, pronouns, and also a bit more about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Ali King. I'm a white woman in my mid-50s. I have long brown straight hair. I wear brown tortoiseshell glasses and have quite a round face. And today I'm wearing a very vivid orange top. Ooh. And with a dark brown necklace against it and blue jeans. And my pronouns are she, her. And Turtle Key Arts is a registered charity. We're based at the Lyric Theatre in Hammersmith, where we're one of their partner organisations. And Turtle Key Arts was really set up to provide access and opportunities and inclusion for emerging artists and young people to engage with the arts, with a particular emphasis on working with young people with disabilities and providing opportunities when they might be most excluded. And some of our projects that we run are supported by the John Lyons Charity, and that's our key club that we do.
Oh, I love it. And I feel like you're best placed to talk about this subject. And I think let's start then with your opinion. Why are the arts so crucial?
Yeah, I mean, I find that a really easy question to answer.
Yeah.
I think the arts are incredibly crucial. They do so much for young people, and especially young people with disabilities. I mean, the arts promote, as we know, well-being. They promote, when you're working together as a group, a sense of team, a sense they help young people feel confident, get young people to sort of share and participate and work together. And I think also having fun, and you can't overlook that. You know, you can't sort of dismiss that. It's really important to be happy. Mm. And for a young person, when you're trying to navigate the world that we live in, and it's getting increasingly harder, and certainly the pressures of social media, I think, again, being able to go out and do an arts activity and take part in something, you're doing something live, you're joining in, and that promotes feelings of happiness and well-being and joy, which is also not to be overlooked.
What are the specific benefits of engaging in arts and cultural activities for young people with learning access needs?
Yeah, I think there are many specific benefits. I think for young people with special educational needs, I think it can be a different way of learning. I think sometimes the conventional courses and curriculum and classes don't necessarily fit someone. that has special educational needs or additional needs. So I think the arts can give that sort of more creativity. So it can unlock learning in a different way. So it can be through visual, or it can be through movement, or it can be through participating through a shared project. It can be through listening. It can be through many different ways. And I think, you know, for someone who's, you know, not neurotypical, actually having the opportunity to approach learning in a different way is really important, because, you know, it also then allows them to realise, you know, just how clever they are and just what potential they have, because, you know, one size doesn't fit all. And I think that what the creative arts does is find different ways of engaging with people. And I think that's is crucial. And I think it's really, really crucial in, you know, an SEN environment. And I think that's a real difference. And I think that's where you can often see the biggest impact and gain of the arts and culture.
Would you say then that's, would you say that the reason that you get up and do what you do is because you want young kids to have the opportunity?
Yeah, very much so. I think that art can make a difference to people's lives. I strongly believe that. I also think that art can have an impact and help make the world a better place to be in. And, you know, I really hope that in a way, I think art allows people opportunities. So that's why we do it. And I think, you know, engaging people when they're young and providing that opportunity is so important. And we've always been real champions for us as well, is finding those people that don't necessarily get that access and maybe will be excluded for a variety of reasons. And we're always very keen to kind of work with them and provide opportunities for them.
Yeah, and you said culture changes lives. So in terms of cultural capital then, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so for me, yeah, cultural capital is about, you know, culture being at front and centre of what happens in young people's lives. And it should have as much importance in schools and education as, you know, more mainstream subjects.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about being overlooked as a young person. I think it's definitely a massive topic we should talk about. I think, do you feel like the arts are completely overlooked over other subjects?
Increasingly, sadly, that's what seems to be happening with the current kind of political landscape. And I think that's absolutely tragic. I mean, we go and work with a lot of schools and they're really under-resourced, they're overstretched, and they're having to sort of, where the arts is coming off the curriculums, they're actually being forced to kind of close down like their arts programmes, or the teachers are leaving. So you're seeing that provision being less and less because it's not a priority. So it's not coming from the top and being sort of put down. And I think that's such a shame. And you're seeing less and less people taking, you know, GCSE dance and drama, or even thinking about it at A level. But even if you don't go that far, which then of course will have a knock-on effect to who's actually studying it, to then who comes and works in the industry. And again, it's like, even if you don't want to go on and study it at a higher level, what it does for you as a young person, just that whole sort of, you know, even with terms of being able to interact and communicate with people or talk or just feel that confidence, it does so much. But it's definitely being overlooked and I think sidelined and marginalised in favour of more traditional subjects. And I think that's about kind of a box ticking exercise. And I think it's about having good stats. And what they're not doing is they're not getting what the benefit of the arts, because you can't apply numbers to it, or you can't kind of quantify that benefit, because it's out there, it's tangible, you see it and you see that improvement with the young people if you engage and work with them. But if you're coming in to fill out a sheet or an appraisal, you're not necessarily going to get that information.
Do you think then arts and cultural organisations are kind of trying to fill that gap outside of the school environment?
Yeah, very much so. I think it's being pushed onto the arts and organisations, and you know, and we're happy to sort of do that. But it really is, and I think, and the schools, you know, obviously are desperate because they see the benefit. And yeah, I think it's definitely being pushed onto arts organisations to provide. But then what's not happening is that funding and resources from local councils and government isn't there. So then you're relying on kind of other organisations, trusts and foundations to see that benefit and to step in and fund. So that's where it's also breaking down in that area as well.
Yeah, I am definitely seeing that. And I think definitely even from when I was at school 10 years back, you know, I'm seeing the funding drop even further. Even Braille lessons I used to be able to have in term time. And now, you know, there's not as much funding. So I can definitely relate to that. In terms of your organisation then, because you do deal with a lot of young people with different access needs, where do you think that cultural organisations can help younger people?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think, first of all, it's identifying what they want. I think that's really key. So I think it's actually listening to the young people and the schools or the community centres, whoever you're engaging with, to sort of access these young people, finding out, you know, kind of where the lack of provision is and what they need. We do go into schools, but we also try and bring the young people out to the organisations where we work, because that's also really important, because that also gives them a sense of independence and kind of a bit of sort of, you know, ownership over it and liberation. It's not happening in their classroom, in their term time, which can also give them a little bit of freedom, I think. So maybe if they've got a preconceived judgment about themselves, or, you know, they might be considered to be, you know, the naughty one. Again, it's starting with a clean sheet. So we often try and get the young people out and working with us. So I think it's about also lobbying to, you know, attend and engage with what's happening culturally in your community, and would make a big difference. And for other funders as well, there aren't many funders that fund arts, and increasingly they're having pressures. And so I think it's also providing more opportunities for those arts organisations to access those and make those projects happen. So, yes, there is a lot to be done to make the case for cultural capital. And there are really good organisations and people fighting for that. And I just hope that there's many more ways that we can all join that fight.
Definitely. Yeah, and what have you found to be the specific challenges trying to engage with special schools and arts projects?
Yeah, we're finding them really under-resourced.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're being squeezed. They're having their budgets cut. You know, they're struggling to obviously provide and cater for the young people that are needing them. And so, and where they're having to follow a certain curriculum, we are seeing arts and culture disappearing. I mean, there's one special school we go and work with, and they've literally got an empty art room, and we went in and used it. And we did a project, an incredible project, actually, again, supported by John Lyons. But in some of the SEN schools we went to, we were the dance provision. We were the arts provision. We were providing the theatre, because they just didn't have the staff or the time in the timetable or the resources to run that department anymore. And so as they'd been forced to cut, they'd had to cut that. And as it had come off the curriculum, the young people were not getting it because the school couldn't provide it, because it wasn't a priority that was coming from the top down. Wow. So it's not the school's fault, and it's not their desire not to provide it. And that's the reality of what we were finding.
Wow. So you find that so many art rooms are just empty?
Yeah. And there have been some where literally they don't have the teacher anymore to actually do run the art classes.
Is that most special schools you go to?
Not most. It's just some. It might be, it depends what we're sort of going in with, but sometimes it can be, you know, there will be a teacher that will be part of their remit to do dance, but obviously they might only get to it once a term. So, or, you know, whereas we're able to go in and do that over a number of weeks. And I think especially, you know, yes, you've got issues in mainstream schools, but I think especially when you're engaging with young people with special educational needs, there is so much incredible potential and joy in those young people. And often it's just also for the organisations to have confidence. And it's just about planning, and it's just about adapting, and anything is possible.
Anything is possible. It is just about adaptation. Mm. It's about thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
And young people with disabilities are some of the most resilient kids you'll ever meet.
They really, really are. And what I love as well is that they're all, you know, they will be so honest, and we, you know, we create that very safe space, and we want people to tell us, because you can never presume to know what someone's thinking or feeling. And if you don't share that disability, you're not necessarily going to know, but you can certainly support.
Yeah, definitely. What's the difference when you work with mainstream schools versus special schools? Is there different provision for you?
Yes. I think when we go into an SEN school and you're working with a, you know, a whole group, obviously the school is more geared around their needs, there's more understanding, and you know, all of our workshop leaders are trained and supported. And it gives us really the ability to create something very bespoke for those young people, and allows, I think, over the course of those sort of sessions, to really, you know, work with them very closely and really unlock their potential, rather than trying to, you know, support them and accommodate them in a mainstream environment, which we can do and we can do very well. But I sometimes think the young person misses out. And I think actually when you're in the SEN environment, A, the teachers have more knowledge and support and understanding, and the school is geared up for that. So then as you're going in as an arts organisation providing that provision, you're already starting from at the same place. There's a shared language and you're working together to deliver that. Whereas I think when you go into a mainstream school, sometimes it can be much harder for the teacher because they're facing a much larger class and they've got so many challenges, and you're almost a welcome relief rather than actually feeling like a partnership. So I think, aww, you know, you create, yeah, probably more meaningful and deeper relationships when you work with the SEN schools. It's just making it equal and right for everyone.
I think that's a testament to your organisation though, because I think people can be scared and kind of, yeah, beat around the bush when it comes to disability. I know that, you know, people worry about kind of access needs for myself when I go into different rooms, yes, and it's just, it, you know, as the young person that kind of happens on a disability, it like happened to me, you're often, you know, told by older adults and things, yeah, like, oh, what do you need? And sometimes it's like, well, just to be a kid, you know,
yeah,
yeah, I am blind or I do have a disability, yeah, but let's just let my hair down.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And I think that's it. And I think for a lot of people, it's nothing more than a little bit of fear and a worry about doing and saying the wrong thing. And we're never afraid to get stuck in at Turtle Key Arts. And I think, you know, and as we've said earlier, the young people are incredibly robust and very good at telling you. But I think it also allows them the space to do that, and it's affording equal respect. You know, and I think that's so important. And yeah, for us, that just seems the right way to be.
I agree. And I think what then needs to be done to close the cultural capital gap for those with learning and access needs?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, unfortunately, obviously, you're always looking at a smaller percentage. So those sort of smaller percentage of young people are going to get ignored and kind of get, you know, washed away in the kind of bigger stats. And I think it's actually, again, recognising the importance of those schools and what they need. And I think, I don't know how we kind of bang that drum, but it's like not forgetting that percentage of young disabled people that need that additional support and need to access learning in a different way.
Mm.
And I suppose more joined up thinking, I suppose. Everyone tends to work very kind of in their own little sort of micro environment, and I suppose it's having that more connectivity amongst organisations itself, and also more partnerships, because that's a really key way. When we believe wholeheartedly in partnerships, you know, whether it's with other organisations, whether it's with schools, whether it's with funders, or, you know, a whole combination of that, because, you know, if you work in partnership, that also gives you a stronger voice, and it gives you more kind of power and gravitas, and it gives you momentum to sort of fight the case.
Ali, thank you.
No, thank you, Lucy, very much.
Stay tuned for part two after this short testimonial.
My name is JK. I am a multidisciplinary artist. I am a cartoonist, digital designer, workshop facilitator, and businessman. And I'm from West London. I grew up in a creative house, and I started my artist career during the pandemic, and I went on to draw Mr. Men characters. And then, along the way, I developed my own cartoon characters called the Shadoodles. They emphasize on showing facial expressions, which I love. So my residency began in 2022. The Cartoon Museum had asked me to do 3 responses at the museum. And since the responses were so good, the museum had decided to buy all of my 3 responses and exhibit it at the museum. So being a professional cartoonist is really good and unique. I've worked with some big galleries such as the Serpentine Youth Collective, the Westminster City Lions, and especially the Cartoon Museum. And I also put on some well-being workshops such as well-being events. And I also want to take my artist journey to around the world, such as New York, Brighton, and other places around the world. The most important people who support me on the way was Paul Lowe at my old school, the Serpentine Youth Collective, the Westminster City Lions, and the best PA, which is my sister. Everyone can do art, even if you were born differently. You can do what you like. The reason why I love art is because there's no right or wrong answer. To find out more information about the JK Cartoon Studios, you can follow us at Instagram at JK_cartoon_studios, and you can find us at www.jkcartoonstudios.com if you want to buy some prints and some socks. If you want to see of my animation in the future, it will be on Netflix, Disney Plus, or Amazon Prime.
So we have identified that there is a definite need for cultural capital. The knowledge about things that are outside of our daily lives, especially when it comes to supporting children and young people with access and learning needs. I suppose the question is now, what can we do together to implement change? How can schools and arts organisations work together to ensure no young person is left behind? And who really is accountable here? We're now joined by Paul Morrow, lead practitioner of the creative arts at Westminster Special Schools. Paul, thank you for joining me.
Delighted to be here.
So, Paul, I always like to start off, if you're comfy, with a quick audio description of yourself, your pronouns, and a bit more about what you do.
Okay. My pronouns are he and him. I'm ginger-haired. I have a ginger beard.
Love it.
I've got a very kind of acidic-y yellow jumper and brown cords. I'm the lead practitioner in the creative arts at Westminster Special Schools, which College Park School is an autistic specific provision. And QE2 School within Westminster Special Schools is a school that supports young people with profound and multiple learning difficulties, severe learning difficulties and complex autism. And I'm also the, I coordinate the West London Inclusive Arts Festival, which is kindly supported by John Lyons and is made up of seven special needs schools, and works with the Royal Albert Hall, the Royal Academy of Art, Action Space and Grey Eye Theatre. So we come together in the festival where and we're informed by co-production. So we're hoping to develop an environment, a kind of like ecosystem where the young people within the schools, the seven schools, if they would like to become artists or performers in the future, we are significantly increasing the chances of those young people being able to do that. We also have a family strand. So we work with families in the seven schools, but then we also work with our cultural partners in developing a programme of events to support them learning more about the cultural offer that's available to them. Yeah, it's a great vehicle for increasing inclusion and inclusive practices.
And after watching that testimonial, which was amazing, by the way, how do you support Jador?
I encountered Jador some years ago when I was teaching him art, and his interest in cartooning was very obvious, and his joy in cartooning. And I'd become aware of the Cartoon Museum from working with John Lyons, and it was by reaching out to them that you could say the rest was history. Really.
What are the challenges then to delivering a rich and varied cultural curriculum in school?
I suppose one of the biggest tensions around that and one of the biggest threats to that is financial. You know, I know a number of colleagues in schools where the schools are under immense financial pressure, where budgets are just allowing them to buy the basic provisions. So in terms of art, that would just be paper, pens and pencils and nothing beyond that. So if you are looking at equipping those young people with cultural capital, that means being able to facilitate those kind of experiences with arts organisations or artists. And if you haven't got the money to do that, you're unable to, it really limits how you can equip those young people with cultural capital.
Is there a curriculum agenda moving away from the arts, so you know young people aren't getting as many opportunities as that we're talking about?
Well, yes, there is. It's been structurally undermined when it was removed from the English baccalaureate. So when the art, all the creative arts subjects were removed from, well, they weren't removed from it, they weren't actually included in it in the first instance. So that kind of messaging is going to message to schools that they don't have value, that there isn't value in the arts. It's kind of slightly contradicted then by the idea of the broad and balanced curriculum, which is a statutory right for every school to be able to deliver a broad and balanced curriculum. So it's mixed messaging. But it is also the subjects, or the subjects that then can, they'll lose time, they'll lose money. There is a dominance, I know, in primary schools, particularly around SATs, when they've got SATs coming up, that all the other subjects kind of fall away. And you basically, every subject is experienced through the arts anyway. I mean, it's the, I mean, it's a part of our area. We sit on chairs that have been designed. We wear clothes that are designed by fashion designers. We all listen to music. We've got wallpaper, paint, decoration on the walls around us. Arts and culture is imbued in everything. Yeah, yeah, everywhere. And it also, you know, English, maths and science are all part of that as well.
Cultural moments define how we see ourselves, you know?
Yep. It creates community cohesion. Mm-hmm. It's how we all, it's the glue that kind of brings us all together, particularly in those great kind of moments, as you say, individually, but also nationally.
Mm. Would you say Ofsted plays a role in how the arts are prioritised?
Well, that's really interesting, actually, because on the Ofsted framework, when schools are being inspected, they have to explore how they are, the school that they're inspecting, how they're equipping the young people with cultural capital. So that's part of the Ofsted framework. So schools get measured by that. So it's the schools that are being inspected have to articulate how they're doing that, how effectively they're doing that. And because cultural capital in itself is a quite a broad reference. So they then have to give that kind of specificity. They have to say, within this school, we do A, B, C, and D. And that is equipping our young people with cultural capital. And with cultural capital being quite, in terms of what it can refer to, there is some, what you could describe some tensions, but it's also some opportunities, is because it hasn't been explicitly defined. Working in the school that I work in, we make a conscious effort to use artists that also describe them, define themselves as deaf, disabled and neurodivergent within our curriculum. So we're kind of introducing them to an inclusive canon, but we're also introducing those kind of conversations around disability as well.
And what is the difference between the arts curriculum in a mainstream school to that of a special school?
I would say one of the most distinctive, or what could be perceived as one of the most distinctive differences, is that when we work with cultural partners, we enter into co-production. So because to work specifically in our setting, they need to understand the needs of the young people, the needs of the school setting. We like to work with cultural partners over a longer period of time because it increases the impact in our school for our young people. It also supports the cultural institution in understanding more about inclusion and inclusive practices. So I would say possibly that would be the biggest difference, is that we have that time where we work together to plan and co-produce the project and deliver the project, whereas maybe in a mainstream setting, if you went to a cultural organisation, it might be much more off the peg kind of offer.
Mm-hmm. And what then are the consequences on the young people for both, I'd say?
I think if you can get co-production right, you can include the young person, you can include the school community, and you can also include the family, which means if you can include all those kind of key people into the mix, you're building very resilient cultural capital, because cultural capital is something that exists in the home as well as it does in school. So if you can bolster that in the home and you can include the family within the conversation and the celebration of those kind of things, it also means within a special needs setting, you can sometimes challenge parental perceptions of their own children and what they can actually achieve. I think in terms of mainstream, I think it could be, there is a huge number of young people who have additional needs who are also in mainstream settings. Sometimes they have amazing experiences in mainstreams where the schools are very well equipped to support their needs. Unfortunately, sometimes that's not the case. So whereas you could have what might be described as a super-served school, a school that's got a very confident way of working with cultural partners, and has that then has an impact on the young people, you could be in a mainstream setting where that doesn't exist and you have children that have less robust cultural capital. They see less people who look like them or speak like them. So it's I think those are probably the biggest differences.
I think that is the case though. Like, if you see less people that look like you, you don't feel like you can achieve, and you can kind of, I don't know, you need role models. Everyone needs a role model, right?
Yep. You need to be able to see it or experience it to be able to see that you could do that, or you could think that you could do that. And I think within cultural capital, that is possibly one of the biggest opportunities there, is that there is the possibility of developing an inclusive canon, one that is inclusive of everyone and reflective of all people, because the arts and culture is so diverse.
What is an inclusive canon then? How do you use that term?
So, for instance, there's an artist called Naina Kalou, who is a neurodivergent artist. She's supported by Action Space, who support learning disabled artists. She's now in the collection of the Tate. So being able to use that artist within an art lesson, where you've got young neurodivergent young people, where you're introducing an artist who is first and foremost identifies as an artist, but also has autism, they're able to see that they themselves can be artists.
Hey, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, definitely. I think that's so important. I mean, I remember not having any role models growing up, and you just think, oh, well, I'm so scared to have a disability now. It's like, if you don't feel like you can amount to anything, then where is kind of like the drive to kind of push forward, and the need to fail, and the want to succeed, you know? Yeah. It's just so interesting. Do you see that in your students now, that they have more drive if they've been taught in that way?
Oh, yeah, completely. I think our young people actually, we've got a project at the moment where they're actually describing themselves as artists.
Oh, brilliant.
A group of upper primary students, and working with those guys in a project where they were working with artists, but the artists were seeing the young people as artists, and how then that young neurodivergent young people, and the opportunity to see how what they engaged in and the kind of creativity of being able to see the world through a different lens opened up all these kind of creative opportunities. And I would also suggest, well, I know for a fact, it shifted the artists who were in the room as the facilitators as much as it shifted the young people in the room who were then starting to perceive themselves as artists. So it's not just benefit here, there's benefit across the space.
Mm-hmm. And how can schools and organisations hold parents and communities and local authorities to account so it can become a collaborative solution?
I think unfortunately, lots of kind of networks have fallen away because of austerity, because of those kind of financial. I think being able to bring people together in the room, so there's much more opportunity to learn about each other, to understand who those individual groups are, how we can work collectively together, particularly around things like co-production, means that holding people account actually becomes structural within that. Because if you're developing things together, you're all invested in it. You all want it to succeed. It needs to be more strategic. I think there needs to be a joined up conversations between local education authorities and within the local community to understand what cultural assets exist in those areas. And then for those cultural assets to be made available to all schools.
Mm-hmm.
But that's policy. That needs to be strategic. And everyone needs to be a part of those networks.
Yeah, and you talk about cultural assets. What resources are available for schools at the minute, or arts organisations that want to make more out of their joint projects and partnerships?
I think one of the things that when we work with cultural partners that is really useful for us is that we've used some of the criteria from the Arts Award. That enables us to... we can use it in terms of assessment material, but it also then supports our cultural partner in having an understanding of how they can support us in evidencing that kind of assessment. it takes some of the labour away from the school, in a sense.
I mean, you say that there's a lot of organisations that are falling away. Like, are there, you say you are tapping into some resources, but do you think there could be a bigger hub?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think being able to bring people into the room together, they can have those conversations, just, I think, better understanding of each other, better understanding of how you can work better together. But I really do believe that it needs to be policy driven and structural. If they had someone in school, if they had a cultural education plan, and then someone in each school had to be the person who was responsible for attending meetings, it would change the kind of geography in those areas of joining up the cultural provision between schools and cultural assets. And one thing that fell out of the festival was the Cultural Inclusion Manifesto. The Cultural Inclusion Manifesto is a set of guiding principles. So if you read the manifesto and you agree with those principles, it's kind of a movement of people working. It's a collective understanding that if we want to increase inclusion across the space, we have to work together. We have to work collectively. It's also understanding that we do need to lobby politicians. So when we've had our conferences, we've always encouraged politicians to come down to open it and try to influence policy and practice to increase inclusion across the space.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Paul, thank you so much for your insights. It's been so great to chat to you.
Thank you.
Thank you both to Ali King and Paul Morrow for their generous and insightful comments on the importance of cultural capital, particularly for young people with learning and access needs. I invite not only arts organisations and schools, but individuals also to take a meaningful step by signing up to the Cultural Inclusion Manifesto. I encourage you to stay engaged with us on this ongoing exploration of inclusion. In the episodes to come, we'll delve deeper into various areas of inclusion, shedding light on critical topics such as career opportunities for people with learning and access needs, inclusive language, and other subjects, inviting insightful discussions with experts and advocates. If you have experience, insights or opinions on what you've learned during these episodes, then please follow John Lyons Charity on Instagram, X and LinkedIn, and let us know what you think. Together, let's continue this journey towards a more inclusive world where everyone, regardless of their abilities, feels seen, heard and valued. Thanks for tuning in.
Hi, my name's Anna Hoddenott and I'm the Senior Grants Manager at John Lyons Charity. I'm a white female and my pronouns are she, her. I'm wearing a bright pink top and black trousers and I have blonde shoulder length hair. I would like to thank our guests today, Ali and Paul, for coming to talk to us about the importance of cultural capital. I would also like to thank Jador Kidd, the cartoon artist, who has shared his experiences with us on his testimony. We at John Lyons Charity are committed to the importance of arts and culture to all children and young people. This is particularly important for young people with learning and access needs. In our Perspective series, we have examined ways in which special schools can better partner with arts and cultural organisations to create meaningful opportunities for young people with learning and access needs. We feel that these opportunities for young people should be of the highest quality, and that can only happen through meaningful partnership working. To find out more about our Perspective series and the funding opportunities available, please see our website, www.jlc.london.